Accession number 14972, Richard Atkinson, reel 3.
Mr. Atkinson, reel 3. You are now obviously doing more serious drill than you'd done before.
Yes.
Route marches, can we look at route marches? Mm-hmm. Were you doing these?
Yes, oh yes.
What kind of distances were?
Oh, well, they were building up to 40 milers. They were building up to forced marches. Well, we call forced marches. There was CSM's parade and a march was a march and everybody did it. As I said to you in the Germans, your first job as an infantry man, whatever you do is secondary, transport or whatever. Yes, an infantry man, and you had to learn this and do this. And you do 10, 12s in a day, something like that, you know, maybe once a week. But once a month, they were building up this force march, which is a stinker. It's had to be done. You finish it with blistered shoulder blades and everything, but...
What did you carry with you?
Your full equipment, full kit, everything. Not a blanket, of course, but you have full big pack, small pack. Water bottle filled, you should go down, make sure you carry your water bottle was filled and things like that. Your gas mask and everything. Because you see, you just take stuff out the gas mask and put a pair of socks in and make it look like when you used to check up, and, you know, so to make sure you're carrying your full whack. Which, when you think of it, it was for your own benefit. You didn't like it at the time, but, you know, you...
What kind of pace did you march at for a
Well, you usually marched out at the regimental pace for maybe it was the first quarter mile or something. And then you settled down to the march at ease where your neck was undone and your rifle was slung over your shoulder. Things like that. But you marched out to the trail, you know, Durham's. If you come to a town or a village and you're marching through it, you march to attention and you're back to Durham's again and you got through it. You're allowed to sing the Durham's song and whatnot. And then when you got through with them, you could march at ease, undo your neck, sling your lengthen your sling. And then you march back in, the last quarter mile was in, back in terms.
Did you have a break?
Oh yes, every hour you stopped for 10 minutes, you had to lie on your back and put your feet higher than your head, find a hedge, and your feet went up, and you used to come around, make sure you're doing it, get the blood back to your head. Oh yes, every hour, 10 minutes in the hour. And you weren't allowed to fall out. They didn't look upon falling out. It was great favour. They wanted to know why. Supposed to be fit enough to do it.
If you fell out on a long route march, was there any vehicle coming up behind to pick you up, anything like that?
Oh, I think so. I think there would be, yes. If they got two, well, they would have to, I think. I can't remember any. But I think, because we had the MO's truck, and, you know... And if it got too bad, it would have to do it. But you didn't fall out. You didn't fall out. It wasn't done, and that was it.
The care of your feet, they must have taken quite a hammering. What did they do to try to protect your feet?
They warned you, clean socks and keep your socks clean. Make sure your feet, your boots, your studs was all... fitted properly. That's one thing about, I must say, they made sure your feet was, you had looked after them properly. And when you come back, the first thing you did was flop down, slow your kit on, and your boots, we had gaiters then, you see, gaiters and stuff, so and then inspected your feet. And any blisters and whatnot was tended to straight away. Before you did anything, then you took your kit off and sort of got freshened up. But your feet was looked after, and they told you, talcum, your boots and things. The definitely did try to make it easier for you and help in their way.
And who did this inspecting?
Well, your officer. Your platoon officer.
You were seeing a bit more of him now?
Oh, yes. He was with you every day now. He was always on parade, and when you're on parade, often on parade and things like that. Saw him every day now, and he was a smashing fellow, my officer, Stanley Cunning and Bunty. And all had nicknames. Every one of them.
What was his nickname?
Bunty.
Was he big?
No. No, you live. Yeah, and I found out afterwards, he was a reporter for the Chronicle. Can I digress and tell you, as I say, I always wanted to go back to Dunkirk because he was killed at Dunkirk. Him and my sergeant, the three of us. That's a different story. He was killed, and I never knew. And I says to my wife, I said, I'm going to go back to Dunkirk one day and find out about Bundy. She says, well, wait there, come well, woman, which I did. And they'll give us his thing. I'm hoping when we're this time to see he's buried in St. Omer. His grave, his room, and everything. His name, his dress. Well, he lived in Hexham and his family. And the sergeants. And I would love to see his grave. Actually, I've got one of the little crosses to put on if I do get the chance. But he was a gentleman.
When you were marching on your route marching, how did you move along the road? Were you in fours, threes, or what?
I think by this time it was threes. I'd done away with the fours and the twos, and I think we're into threes by this time. And you march along the road in threes. They'll set the head with his walking stick, no kit, and your sergeant behind, chivvying you on. But he marched with you at the head.
How did you keep yourselves, shall I say, amused on these long marches?
Oh, you're singing, and you're told to sing. You're told to sing, and you could talk to each other, and you could sing, and of course you kept your road discipline, your pace and whatnot.
Were they the old First World War songs?
Oh, all sorts of songs, filthy songs, anything, and especially if there's any crowds there, you played up to the crowds and whatnot. Yeah.
How were the country people receiving you now? As you said before, before the war, of course, the army wasn't looked upon well. No. What had it changed?
Yes, the wartime changed it. Oh yes, you're suddenly all heroes. Wartime. I mean, for all the war hadn't started, but they knew it was going to come. The treat us very well. You know, there's always a house where you could go and you could have a bath, things like that, or they'd invite you in for a cup of tea, things like that, which. The war brought that out. But these country people did, yes. And there was a village shop where you could go in for chocolate. And she was a nice old woman, you know, one of these things. God, it was a different era to what it is now, you know. People was pleasant than us.
Did you get involved with in more serious socialising with the population? I'm thinking of girls and boys.
No. Well, we, the Durhams, I suppose it applied to every regiment, was also in out-of-the-way country places. You were never anywhere, and you got let out in the town once in a while, things like that. But, you're always sufficiently far. See, we thought we were in Siberia. And Oxford was just down the road in Banbury. But we didn't know. You see, there's no trucks, there's no buses, and that in them days, you know, run through villages. And you only went anywhere in an army truck. So. You're in the village, you're in the village, sort of style.
What leisure did you, were you able to get?
If you got a night off, you could walk to Chipping Norton, which is 5 miles away. So by the time you walked there and had a few drinks, which you didn't have very much money for drinks, I know it was only £5, but you didn't have that much money. You only had a shilling a day, and you had to give sixpence to your mother, so you didn't have all that much money. So you just didn't. You might go, Darwin used to put picture shows on and stuff like that for you, but. He didn't have the money, so he didn't really source. But later on in the war, when you're in Tibet and those places, you know, and I see you looking for girls and whatnot, or single young lads. And when you're in a town like that, which we were, the transport by this time was getting built in towns. Yes, you were looking for girls and MTs. But we're just kids that were, didn't know nothing in before.
To keep yourselves occupied, because at times it must have been a bit of a boring life in some ways, was the gambling going on with people?
Yes, it was frowned on, mind. Frowned on. Cards was definitely taboo. If the officer thought you had cards, you'd slate you. Cronanga was a thing. But of course, it was brag schools and whatnot going on. But then again, there wasn't that much money, but it was also the usual click that had it, and they cleaned everybody out, and you did it each time, and you never learned your lesson. But that's all you had, really, because you're in these little country places. There's nothing else to do other than a picture show or whatever the army put on for you, took you to.
It didn't cause problems,
the
card games?
No. Yeah, you see, I've lost again and walked away. You know, that sort of attitude. My skin kind of lends a penny for a cup of tea the next morning. as your mate would buy you a cup of tea next morning.
Sports, and did you get any sport?
Yes. I must say the Durhams was pretty keen on sport. And you used your loaf, and if you got into a sports thing, you got excused duties. You get excused this and excused that. So he went in for, like, football was a thing with the battalion team. You had to be good for that. You know, there's no way you could fiddle that. But he went on for other stupid things like hockey and basketball and stuff like that. You're no good at what you used to do it. I mean, and I used to do a bit run for them, you see. So you could have an extra cup of tea and things like that. Or you could have an extra sandwich. You know, say, oh, yes, you're running, yes, you know. But things like that. And with being the transport as well, that was another good out. If you went out doing anything, you could always hang back, be late in, and your meal was kept for you. So you used to do it deliberately, see, to miss things. Like, those are little tricks of the trade you picked up as you went along, sort of style, to break a monotony.
Before we come to your transport experience, you mentioned having a gas mask. Did you do gas training,
yes.
Gas precautions?
Yes, you went in the gas chamber and you had to take the mask off, petrified, and you did that. Come out with your eyes streaming, and you take your mask off and you're dying for the day, and they wouldn't let you out, they kept you in, let you see where it was, and they put a blob of mustard on your hand, and they wiped it straight off, and they said, now that's what to look for, it'll be a stain like that, you see. And there's gas posts with this paper on would turn different colours, and you had to learn all those. Aircraft recognition, you had to learn, you know, all that, those sort of things. But you did gas training, and with the cape and everything, mask. You did marching with a mask on, and maybe if we are on orders, everybody will wear their gas mask from 10 to 11. Cooks, officers, everybody, you're all walking on with your gas mask on.
Were they particularly comfortable to wear?
No. But you see, if you got them on right, you got used to them, and they used to mist up, and you had that anti-mist stuff, and you, because you couldn't take them off to clean them, and think, you know, the inside the eyes, you'd smell them. Thank God we never needed them.
You mentioned the rifle, and you mentioned the boys, and the Bren gun. Did you do anything with hand grenades at this stage?
Yes, you learned hand grenades, Mills hand grenades.
How was that done?
Well, you were took to a pit. You learned how to prime them first, put the detonator in, and then screw the button and put the detonator in. You learned how to set a 7-second fuse. So when you pull the pin, and you had a handle in your hand, and when you threw it, the lever used to fly off, and that used to set the time detonator away. You'd be in a pit, and there'd be a sergeant with you, and you'd throw it over and wait for the bang. But you had to, you know, throw it and get on and go for the bang. No sound for it.
Any problems with it?
Yes, sometimes it didn't go off, and you used to send for the armour. He had to tend to that. And then you take the detonators out when you're finished. You're in a big box, 12 in a box, and the detonators was in a tin. You used to put the detonators back, just a little round, like a U-shaped thing.
Were they very effective, the hand grenade?
I don't know. I don't think we're ever used, to be honest. No, I don't think we're ever used. I can never remember anybody using them. Then maybe, well, later on when we did house-to-house fighting and stuff like that, put our different grenades in.
Did you get any training on mortars?
No, I didn't get mortar training. There was a mortar section. 2-inch, you had the 2-inch in the company, which is only smoke, and the 3-inch mortars was a specialist section like the transport was. So you didn't get any training on them.
Do you think, looking back, that the training you were getting then had a lot to do with the experience of the First World War?
Yes, it was all First World War. Yeah.
Were you digging trenches?
Yes, no, dug trenches. We dug trenches in France. You know, it was First World War thing. It was after we were chased out of France that they realised I had to. Oh, yes, it was all 1418.
You did mention you're having lectures as well. Oh, yes. What were they giving you for lectures?
All sorts. It could be VD. It could be military law.
Were you getting regimental history?
Regimental history, oh, yes, you got that regularly. Often, and you had to know it, and you had to repeat it and learn it. King's Regs. All sorts of stuff. If we transport, yes, you have to learn the basics of repairing, you know, not repairing, but maintaining the transport, looking after it and whatnot. See, and that's a 14, you see, it's like a horse. from the First World War, your first job when you come back at night time was prepare your vehicle for the next morning, the same as it had to do with the horse. That's the way they're talking and thinking.
Did they talk to you about the Germans themselves? What you could
well, you learned aircraft recognition. No, I don't think they talked about the Germans. I don't think they ever showed us a German. No. It was never mentioned then. No.
You said that you went over to transport. What date would this be?
Well, that was before we went to France. Little Compton, when they brought the transport in, and I was 13th platoon driver. So, and I was still with the platoon as a driver, but I'd been transferred to headquarters and moved to headquarters and transferred back to second to the third platoon. So I was still doing exactly the same job, but I was now headquarters company.
So you decided, or you'd applied to be to move in the transport section. How did that take place? What happened?
Well, let's see. This PSM rig, he says to me, transport. He says, you'll get a rough time. He says, don't forget. He says, you'll be on the shelf. I know that. He says, but you'll be off your feet, which was good thinking for the infantry, and. You wouldn't be in the line. That was another thing. He says to me, he says, you'll miss a lot of the line duties. But he says, don't forget, he says, it'll not be all honey. He says, you'll have some rough passages with holes and traffic discipline and whatnot. He says, well, he gives his bad points as well, but he says, I think the good points are out there. So when he says, yes. So I went, well, by this time I had a corporal. Transport corporal for C Company was a corporal visit. Now he had his own business, transport business. He was a smashing fellow as well, but he had been a Marine, and all you could get out of him was when you're as good as a Marine, you'll be a good Durham. And I said, I'm in the transport now. He says, yes, but and he still had that infantry training in him, and he never let you forget it. For all you're a driver, you're still an infantry man with the company.
So you would apply. To
no, wait, he just said, I'd like to be the driver. And he says to me, have you got any experience? I says, oh, yes, I drove an old T4. We used to mess around with his kids because didn't have a driving license in them days. He said, oh, you can drive. I says, yeah. He says, well, that's yours. And I was a driver. I wasn't even tested or anything. And then the first baptism of real traffic was when we drove to Southampton to go to Cherbourg, France, and I was amongst tram cars and I was lost. I was all panic station. But it just progressed.
So you said, right, oh, you're a driver.
Yeah.
Did you go and pick up a truck? Was the system of
I went to headquarters company, and there was a fellow there, was a corporal Madison. He's a sergeant now. He's my sergeant. We're still alive. We'll still meet him. I'll see him this Sunday. He's good to France with us. He, smashing fella, out this world. But he couldn't give an order. He couldn't say a quick march. He'd say, follow me. But in regards to transport, he had worked in transport all his life. He's an owner, and he was out this world. He's very good. And he says to me, right, he says, there's your truck, sure as a rudiments. It was a Guy commercial. Oh, hideous things to drive. Sure as a rudiments. He says, there you are. Now he says, just get as much press as you can, and you'll manage. And, he gives confidence, and that was it. And we drove back to the company, and we had to learn, because I had to be packed in a special way and everything. We learned how to put stuff on, the bend guns here, and rum there, and, things like that.
As a driver, did you have to learn anything about maintenance?
Yes. Well, the essential things like tyre pressures and petrol and oil, water and stuff like that. Keep it clean and look after this and do that. Because the vehicles are very basic. I mean, there's nothing, no luxuries about them, no windscreen or anything like that. But you learned the basics. And that's it. It's like, first of all, treat as a horse and bed it down for the night when you finish your duties for the day, so it's ready the next. You couldn't say, I'll fill it up in the morning. It had to be done there and then, ready in case of emergencies, which is essential.
Did they put you with a mechanic or something to do this? Learn this all yourself?
Yeah, learn all this yourself. There's no mechanics. Then you went out to see where the company went on a march. So you went with them. And the three company trucks was there. And you sort of just kept you had your convoy discipline, which is maybe 80 feet apart and stuff like this. Or you're following your platoon.
And this would be at walking pace?
Walking pace. And you just picked it up as you went along.
So you'll never be out of bottom gear then?
No, not when you're with the thing. But if you've got jobs, like you see, you might get a job, go somewhere and do something, and you just went on, you know, like normal driving. But when you're out with the company, especially in France, you know, when I marched from Vimy and that to Dunkirk, you're walking behind the platoon at walking pace. And he struggles with helping on getting the rest and jumping off him.
Were they pretty strong vehicles?
Oh, they were very strong. They were four-wheel driving and a V8 engine. But the top cars have got now, and that was a 1,500-weight truck. It would have went up the side of a house. Oh, there's never any dangers of breakdowns or not being powerful enough. They were very powerful. And every engine was a V8 engine. That was 8 cylinders. Well, modern cars only have 4 now.
So when the rest of your company were reporting for their various training activities on a morning, you were going to the trucks, were you?
You were with the transport, and you were doing whatever was necessary. You may have duties that was in connection with it. You see, you may be on a coal fatigue going picking coal up somewhere for the cookhouse and whatnot. Different job. You had different job like that. But you had essentially 13 platoon. When they moved, I didn't, you had all 13 platoons, guns and ammunition and everything on your truck. And that was it.
Could you get 13 platoon on your truck as well?
No. Well, it was only a small truck. You and the officer was and the officer wasn't allowed to drive. He would most probably ride beside you. But if a fellow was hurt, I think you could put him on a truck. But no, you didn't carry any men whatsoever.
Was it a platoon truck for carrying the men in a motorised division?
No. Service Corps did that. The RSC was called in to transport people. But you had trucks in emergency, like QM stores, that would leave them. If they see, like, two companies had to be rushed forward, the QM stores would be left in the dump, and they'd use that 3-ton truck to take them. But, if there's men carried, like, if I'm going anywhere, like, say, when we're in Longcourt, and we had to go to Castle Bromwich to fight a corsair, the RSC was called in, and we were amongst them. 30 platoon would have been us. He took me were behind him with the ammunition and guns.
So you always carry the weapons and
yes.
The ammunition?
You always carry 13 platoons. And there's a special way to go in, and it fitted in the wheel arches, and that was made to correspond with the size of the Bren gun box and things like that. And it all fitted in a special way. And I could go to the truck, like, say, 13 platoon section, could go and pick his gun up and knew exactly where it was. Now, blankets was carried on your truck. You had 2 blankets, and they're rolling in bundles of 10, and they were carried on the truck as well.
What kind of miles per gallon were you getting out of them?
Oh, it wasn't very much. Oh, no. It wasn't 10, 15, maybe, something like that. They're very powerful vehicles. They weren't.
As a driver, did you have a different commander now?
No, your platoon commander was your commander, but you're responsible to headquarters, you see. Now, Joe Madison. Your sergeant, he come around and whatnot and do things and say, yeah, MTO. You still get you got your officer in headquarters, but your officer was responsible. You still.
Was yours the only truck with the platoon?
Yes. Each platoon had its own truck.
At company headquarter level, you've got 4 platoon, four platoon groups?
There are 3 platoons. There was 3 by this time. See, they come to the 3s, everything went to the 3s. So I think it was 13, 14, 15, or 12, 13, 14. But something like that. But the company commander had his, what he called his PU, personal utility. He had that for his benefit. Scooting around, whatnot. It was only a little 800-weight thing. And the company and the platoons had 1,500-weights. The cooks had a big vehicle. Headquarters, but it was kept at headquarters, and when they were moving anywhere, the cook's truck come in and pick C Company's cookhouse up and moved it.
So battalion headquarters would have a larger number of vehicles for
yes. Their every duties. Vehicle was headquarter company and were seconded to the companies. They all come under headquarters. I mean, I was in C Company, my address and my letters were like, you know, rank, rank and number. Headquarter company, C Company. So I was always headquarter company, but I never saw them. And I left C Company, and, you know, it was a headquarter driver.
It was a motorised division, yes. Wasn't it, the 50th yes. Division? How did that affect the training at all?
Oh, well, the fellas had to learn to bus and debus and things like that.
And this was for the RSA trucks?
Yes. And see, if you're going on an exercise, like you went on the Dartmoor and exercises, they took you on the learn to debus. Enemy attack, aircraft attack, you see, you learn how to get out the trucks quick and into the hedges and whatnot and stuff like that. It's moving, but they always learn to bus and debus. They were allocated the thing. But the RDSC provided that.
Did you get any leave whilst you were at this place?
Yes. We got Christmas leave, but it was embarkation leave as well.
Special trains. How did your family receive you when you got home?
Oh, open arms. Well, my mother did. See, my father says, if I catch in a pub, I'll make you swallow the glass. And I says, well, I'm a man, so to say. But I never went to the pub where he was. We just, our army mates would pick up where they weren't. But my mother was all right. She understood that. But that's why I'd leave. One leave, special leave, and would come special trains from Banbury to Newcastle, special trains back.
How many days was it?
I think it was 10, I think. Yes, it would be 10.
Did you know you were going to go abroad at this point?
Yes.
And how did that...
Well, they didn't tell you were going abroad, but it was in the air. You suddenly... there's little things like... make sure that you've got no personal stuff here, leave it at home. They couldn't tell you outright, but there was little things, finger pointing at. But when we come back from there, the Durham's, this was a fantastic regiment when you think of it. Married men had Christmas, regardless. The children, single men, New Year. You're single, yeah. So, as soon as the New Year I came back, I was at an advance party for France and I was away. So I never got a chance ever again to say, I was going abroad.
But when did you leave for France?
It was just after the New Year. In the January. I don't think I have the date here. The 26th or the 12th, according to that, but it wasn't. I had Christmas leave.
What was the winter like that you were experiencing?
In France?
In England. That winter.
Oh, it hadn't started. It was quite mild. It hadn't started. But when we got to France, it did.
You mentioned the fact that the king had come, mm-hmm. And you were paraded. And so. Do you recall, you say you're in the front rank, so yes. You must have got really, really close to him.
Yes, I heard him speak as he came past me. That's when he asked if the division was ready for active service. Is this division ready for active service? And he said, oh yes, sir, they're all fully equipped, trained and everything. Which, the 3 or 4 or 5 year ranks didn't even have cowboys.
How did he look if you got so close to him? What did he look like?
Oh, well, actually, to us he looked like a painted doll. He was all this, he's British woman and all that, and he looked, we just couldn't believe it. As close as that. But, because his aide de camp that was on, and evidently he went around somewhere else, and they tell me that there was a bit of a commotion somewhere. His truck broke down. Something funny, but there was it. But we marched from Longcombe to Chipping Norton 5 mile and marched back for the parade.
You see, you went on and advanced with the transport. Yes. Went off on its own.
No, I went. I was advanced for the transport. Because the transport didn't. We drove the trucks to Southampton, and they were put on board a ship, and we were on another ship, sailed at night time to Cherbourg. Then they put us in the French Foreign Legion barracks until the transport came off and we picked up on the quayside. I never saw the battalion after I left them in Longcombe until we got to Lille. It lands in them places because the transport went to Cherbourg and went across there, and we had to drive all the way to Mans, Rouen and all that, up to back the battalion, and they were transported by rail. So after leaving Longcombe, I never saw them, then met up with them in France again.
What was your memories of the journey across?
It was dark, it was night. You went across at night time. I think it was a railway boat, because the railway had their own boats in those days. And The first example was driving through Southampton amongst the tram cars and not knowing whether to go left or right. But we got there. And I said, then the next morning, when we docked, they put us in this French Foreign Legion barracks. Because they said, look at that soldier standing there like a rag bag. It was smoking and all sorts. We couldn't believe it. And our transport came off and we picked up on the docks and drove away.
What was your first impressions of the French?
Oh, funny. Well, see, this French soldier standing there, and then they put us in the barracks, and there was a lot of them in white uniforms. We said, white uniforms? They said, oh, yeah, they're doing punishment. That's their drill or on the, you know, field punishment of some sort. And they were in white. And the bunks was four high, and at 8 o'clock, the lights went out, and in the dark, there was no messing about. There was no feeding arrangement, so you just had to sort of forage for what you could get yourself. There was, it wasn't organised at all.